Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Airway First, the podcast from the Children's Airway First Foundation. I'm your host, Rebecca St. James. Today, we're going to jump into part two of our conversation with pediatric ENT, David McIntosh. So let's pick up with where we left off in our conversation yesterday with epigenetics, and let's talk to Dr. David McIntosh.
So, but the thing, you know, when we look at all the things that we could mention that can feed into the trigger, top of the list is having an airway problem leading to a sleep problem. That is, you know, because across the board, we're talking in the range of somewhere around about 20% of children having this. And if we look at, go back to the ADHD, you know, in that research study and the ones that have come, we have seen ADHD symptoms disappear in 25 to 50% of children after they've had surgery to relieve their airway obstruction. Now, you go and do the math on that. That's just one condition and one treatment that has been given to these children with an ADHD diagnosis, and up to half of them are then off the list. Half of them. That's nuts. What else are we missing? What else are we missing? And there'll be, I'm sure there'll be some specialist out there in some other medical field who's probably doing the same thing with someone, crying out, you know, for people to listen to them, saying, hey, look, you know, your child with ADHD, it's not that, it's dot, dot, dot. And you and I don't know about it because, you know, we're not in that rate. We're not just not in that. And that just proves the point again of how we have to understand parents can't know about it, because if there's some specialist out there that's cottoned on to, you know, some, I don't know, let's just make something up, some gut problem that all you got to do is just eat this, you know, whatever from wherever, and 20% of kids will have a transformational event. Every parent would want to know about that. Well, we're talking about breathing and sleep. We're not talking about a gut problem. We're not talking about some magic superfood. We're talking about the basic of breathing and sleep. And we're not talking about 20% of kids with ADHD. We're talking up to 50% of kids with ADHD. So, you know, in terms of the elephant in the room, we are front and center in terms of where we're at. But the problem is we're just not, you know, there. And, you know, as I happily do these things, you know, I just emphasize this to the parents that listen, is that whenever you've come across something like this and you learned something, you didn't know what you didn't know. I guarantee I guarantee you five of your friends don't know it either. And you know what you need to do? You need to get them to listen to this. Okay.
Exactly.
And then if you're already in that sort of circle of parents that have children that are, you know, neurodivergent, neurodevelopmental management of the same, and you didn't know about breathing or sleep, well, make sure that the whole group knows, okay? This has to be a collective heavy lift where you pass it forwards and you give the next person the benefit of this knowledge as well. Because at the end of the day, what we want is we want children to reach their full potential. And we've all got intrinsic potentials. You know, we're not all going to be doctors. We're not all going to be lawyers. And trust me, it's not as glamorous as it sounds.
The world would be so boring if we all were, right? Hey, everybody's different. But if your child is creative and they can't sleep, guess what? They're not going to become a writer or an artist or whatever when they're older. It's just not going to happen.
Yep. If we were all doctors, then I guarantee you we'd all be walking because no one would know how to fix a car. All right.
That's true.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. And so on and so forth. So we all need to be different. You know, again, we are divergent. We need, it's essential that we're divergent and so forth. And in that context, we all have our interests and so forth and potential and, you know, and our interests, you know, and we, you know, you talk about, you know, you can have examples, you know, of high ranking level people, you know, it could have been doctors or lawyers or business people, and they just walk away from it all and they just go and paint and it makes them happy. Yes. It's like, huh, all right. Go listen to that little inner child that's yelling out, you know, and express that. So from that point of view, I think moving forwards, we need to, those that are involved with the ADHD, ASD communities to have even more awareness, even more emphasis on breathing and sleep issues. And if I talk ear, nose, and throat, I'm going to throw ear infections into the mix there as well. Because the problem, particularly with these neurodivergence issues, is that it makes it worse in terms of the impact. So for a child that
How
has an
so?
ear infection, well, if, for a child that gets an ear infection, they get some fluid behind their eardrum that sits around for a while, and they have a
Right.
period of time where they can't quite hear properly. Because of the divergences and the functioning, that impact is magnified extraordinarily. So it's kind of one of those things where the rules don't apply. You know, normally we say, oh, the ear infection, they've got ear infections, but they're not that bad. But hang on a sec, you're telling me that your child has speech and language development issues. So anything that feeds that beast, and it all gets put down to the autism, all gets put down to the ADHD. It's like it becomes the excuse when in
Instead of
actual
let's
fact,
go to what the root could be, we're
when in
stopping
actual
here.
fact, yeah, when in actual fact, having those things means that what would, in the context of things, be an ear infection that maybe isn't that bad is actually really quite significant for that child. And that's where we take away the generalizations and we get to the specifics. And if by doing the specifics, we then, focusing on the individual, then we actually have a more proactive scenario in play. Because an ear infection that, the parent goes, oh, yeah, look, every time they get an ear infection, their speech goes backwards a bit. That's significant. That's
Yes.
big. Every time they get an ear infection, their behavior gets so much worse. That's significant. Okay. So that's where we just need to be mindful of things, again, sort of being normalized with,
I was
an
about
ear
to say, stop
infection.
normalizing.
Yeah. And so hang on a sec. So when your child gets an ear infection, does it really make a big difference to who they are for a while? Oh yeah. Okay. That's a big deal. Okay. So that's where we sort of, I think we need to focus and emphasize the importance of, getting these things right. And there's just huge knock-on effects that happen. So that, for example, the fussy eating. Well, if you can't chew properly and you have to breathe through your mouth, which leads to it getting dry, and you need to sort of come up for breath in between food items, you're not going to hoe down on a big chunky juicy steak. You're going to want, soft, mushy processed foods. Well, there's a problem. We're feeding the beast again.
Yes.
Okay,
Yep.
these things circle back. And they go, oh, well, the child's sensory. You go, yeah, they're sensory because they've realized they can't eat, chew, and swallow properly.
Right.
They're surviving is what they're doing because
Yes.
they've worked out what's easy, they've worked out what's hard. They're going to go the easy option, they're going to go the easy route. So they're going to live off of smoothies and yogurt and anything that's been processed because it's all basically been, pre-chewed and pre-digested by the machine for them anyway. So there's that gravitation there. Plus, it affects their sense of taste, it affects their sense of smell. So things taste weird, things smell weird to them. So
Right.
that sort of leads into it as well. So there's all these things that start to play into it that you again, you just blame the ADHD, you blame the ASD for, where in actual fact, it's a manifestation potentially, again, of some of those ear, nose, and throat problems that we really want to emphasize, being my bias, to say, hang on a sec, have a look at the back of their throat. Have they got really big tonsils? Because if they do, that's going to make it really hard to swallow. And they're going to notice that it's hard to swallow. And if they've got sensory tendencies, they're going to notice that way before anybody else does. Okay. Because that's going to be to them is a big deal.
Right.
And then it's going to become more obvious. And then it's going to be part of what gets labeled part of their spectrum of symptoms is fussy eating, and oral sensitivities and the like. So,
When
we're
in fact, it
making.
could be that the tongue is not in the roof of their mouth, so they're not regulating. And here we go again, we're back to the airway.
We're back. It's a conspiracy of people are onto me. Everything leads to the airway. All right, I'll call it out now.
That's all right. That's what we are too. Same conspiracy.
All right, we'll go to our secret meeting and handshakes later.
There you go.
There's just and the reason that we're so front and center with airway is because of its interplay with sleep, and we've got to make sleep an important topic of health. And it is, if we look at like your big sporting teams, so like your NFL teams, all right, you got players there with tens of millions of dollars. These are big investments that these people are representing. On your professional teams, okay, so these are the teams that have got access to enormous amounts of money, enormous amounts of technology and wellness and health and just next level. They have sleep doctors on their list now. It used to be the team doctors were like the orthopedic surgeons and stuff, and now they have the sports psychologists because they know that's important. Now they have the nutritionists because they know that's important, and of course now they have the sleep doctors on there as well as consultants, and they have the sleep trackers, and they're making sure that these players know because it's in their contracts. You don't stay up until 1 o'clock in the morning on your phone anymore. We know when you are going to sleep, and we know if you are getting good sleep. Why? Because good sleep is part of your overall performance on the field, and that's what we're paying for you for. And for the time that you're going to do that, we own you. We own your time, not just on the field, but we basically regulate a lot of what you get to do and how you get to do it, and sleep is now on that list. And that's not done in a dictatorial way or anything. It's in the benefit of that athlete
I was
to
going to say, and
know
they're
about
protecting their
sleep.
investment is what they're
Yeah,
doing.
they're protecting their investment, but it's good for the player as well because the player, has that, like most of us is like, oh, sleep's just one of those things I get around to. It's not that important. To then it's like, oh wow, you mean like I can perform better? Hey, if I can perform better, I'm going to be worth more money, right? It's like, two and two is four. I'm going to do everything I can to optimize what I can do, as and so forth. So these things all again, sort of just to emphasize, if you want to look at what are the top people with effectively unlimited resources doing, they're investing in their wellness, they're investing in their sleep, they're investing in their breathing. There's got to be a reason for that. It's not a fad. There's got to be a reason for that. So that whole, I'll sleep when I die. Well, to be honest, you'll die if you don't sleep. And it's actually been proven. So from that point of view, we really want to get, breathing and sleep. Just the same conversation that it needs to be about food and exercise. They all need to be those level playing fields of understanding and awareness. That's just the basic thread. Of starting at the parent level, that's the time to catch it at its best, is catch it in the child. If your child's got it, well, we get on and we fix it. Whatever that is, it is what it is. But at the end of the
And if you
day,
keep going to a provider that says, and this is what we tell, you don't have to say it, we'll say it. You keep going to a provider and their response is, let's just watch it. No, we're not going to watch it. Or it's all poppycock. Perhaps find a new provider. Be this is where the advocacy comes into place because they may not know
it
about
is.
it, but if they're open to it.
So and again, I think it's helpful for the parents to have something in their back pocket. So the paper that I think is the top of the tree for this one is one that was done by a researcher called Karen Bonnock, that was out of the Einstein University, and that research paper was published in 2012. And was actually done in the United Kingdom. But what they did, just so that people can understand, so they monitored 11,000 children for the first 7 years of their life. And the parents had a simple job: does your kid snore, mouth open, or stop breathing at night? And these were surveys, questions that were done every couple of months. And that was sort of their screening process to then see what the kids breathing through the night was. And where the child had, or the parent observed on a consistent basis for 6 months, from one time point to the next, that the answer was yes to any of those three things: mouth breathing, snoring, stopping breathing, any of those three things, that child was put into the sleep disordered breathing category. And they ended up through that with about 2,000 odd children, which again highlights my point. That's 20% of children right there. You know, 2,000 of 11,000-ish, that's 20% of kids right there. What they did, though, is they did exactly what we just alluded to. They watched and waited, okay? Because that was one of the
That
paradigms,
was
you know, 10 years ago.
the
It's like,
research, yeah.
and it was literally, don't worry, they'll outgrow it. And what did they find? Well, they found those 2,000 kids, that 20%, that got the sleep disordered breathing. And they did find some kids down the track that did outgrow it, but that wasn't their prime interest. Their prime interest was to look at it from a behavioral and education point of view. That was their outcome. So they've got the kids basically then fell into three groups. Kids, you know, it's actually broader than this, but I'll break it down even more. Kids that never got sleep disordered breathing, kids that got sleep disordered breathing that hung around throughout the whole time once they got it, and kids that got it where it went away. Now, let's focus on the kids that got it that went away, because they're the interesting group to my mind. The kids that got it and then it went away, when they looked at these kids at the age of 4 and 7, these kids were more hyperactive, had problems with their concentration, were prone to being aggressive, had trouble relating to other kids, and had troubles just in general with, you know, emotional regulation and behavior. Hyperactivity was way at the top of the list. What's part of the ADH? What's the H in ADHD?
Exactly.
It's hyperactivity. So what they found is that in the group of kids that outgrew the airway problem, they did not outgrow the consequences of brain development that came with that. So that
Yes.
was the first big wake-up call. It's like, you know what? We found a problem. We let the kid outgrow the problem, but they were left with a consequence. So that's the big one there. And I'll come to another research element in a sec. But within that research paper, the second thing that they found that I think is really important is the timing of things. And the younger the child was when they first started, in particular under 18 months of age, that was a standout. Okay. And the next standout was 2.5, the next standout was 4, but the big one was 18 months of age. Okay. The big standout, though, was that the younger it started, the more likely those problems were going to sit around and still be there, regardless of whether the child outgrew it or not. The more likely they were going to have those problems show up at the age of 7. So think about that. The breathing and sleep problem in a 14-month-old shows up as ADHD symptoms in se at 7 years of age. So the second thing is, first of all, they are not too young to have the problem. And they are certainly not too young to get it fixed. Okay. It is possible to happen very early on in the piece. And if it does, you want to get it fixed. And this is the third string to the bow in terms of the papers to highlight in that context. Can we prove, has it been proven, the difference between early versus delayed intervention? And the answer is yes. And that's in the CHAT study, that's the Childhood Adenotonsillectomy study. Which is a US study. And what they did is they found grid kids with sleep disordered breathing, and then they broke them up into two groups. They broke them up into the groups of, we're going to fix you now versus we're going to give it 6 months before we fix you. Now, in that, we're going to give it 6 months before we fix you, those kids fell into two groups, those that got better, those that didn't. And what they wanted to do is look at those that got better by themselves versus those that had surgery 6 months prior. Okay. So we've had surgery, you know, let's say you've got group of kids that had surgery now, a group of kids that didn't, and we're looking up 6 months later. And the kids that we've selected out are the kids that had surgery that made them better versus the kids that just got better by themselves. And we're going to look at how does that then compare to the behavioral outcomes. Long story short, the kids that had surgery did better than the kids that got better by themselves. So even in that 6 months that it took for these kids to declare themselves as having got better, they had a worse health outcome than the ones that had surgery. So that's all it takes. And that's, again, is exactly what the Karen Bonnock study did. They said 6 months. It's a recurring theme. It's come up in the Canadian research and the child study again. 6 months. 6 months. It's
Make
all
a
it
huge
takes.
difference. And I'll
Okay.
and we'll put the links to all of this in the show notes, but I've read the Karen Bonnock study, and I will tell you, reading that along with everything else that I've read, and I highly recommend our reading list to parents if they haven't read it yet. But as I was reading it, in the back of my mind, all I could hear over and over is something I used to say all the time: I'm not raising children, I'm raising adults. They're children now, but I'm raising adults. And if you, from my perspective, if you think about it like that, let's get the airway fixed. Let's have them sleep. Because guess what? When they don't, the brain's not developing. Health issues are starting. And we're seeing kids with high blood pressure, anxiety, depression. And we could have stopped it back here.
So I thought what you just touched on, I think, is another great rabbit hole to go down, because we've just been brain, 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 and brain. Let's just pull back from that one for the moment. Let's talk now about another body system. Let's talk about the cardiovascular system. Okay. So the cardiovascular system means heart and blood vessels. Okay. So in children with sleep-disordered breathing, they are more likely to have irregular heart rhythms. Okay. So, those TV shows where they come in with the paddles and they shock the heart? Right. Well, that's all related to the heart has stopped. And one of the reasons that the heart stops is because it's got into an irregular rhythm. Again, amazing part, piece of, biological engineering as to how the heart works. I won't go into the weeds on that one. But so children can get irregular heart rhythm from having sleep-disordered breathing. So can adults, but we've got one of, everything I say in kids is adults are pretty much the same too, but it's more significant in children. They get high blood pressure, particularly at nighttime. So their blood pressure can be normal during the day, but it gets high during the night. Why? Because during the night, when they're not breathing properly, they go into stress mode. What does that do? Pushes out that stress hormone. We call it adrenaline, you call it epinephrine, tomato, tomato.
They're
It's the
just
same
in fight or
thing.
flight all night.
Yeah, it's their fight or flight, and that leads to the blood pressure going up. But it also does something really, really pernicious, and it sensitizes the blood vessels and makes them stiffer, which is a contributing factor then to getting high blood pressure later on in life. And when we look at this sort of thing, there was an Israeli study where they looked at cardiovascular disease in young adults, and what they found. With early cardiovascular disease, a lot of it was related to poor sleep. They didn't specify airway, but poor sleep before the age of 30. So wake up call again, right there. And we have a, and I keep hearing all these podcasts, like, if anybody, this is shameless now. If anybody can link me in with someone like Andrew Huberman, or Peter Attia, very prominent podcasters in the healthscape. They are talking about health and wellness, blood pressure. And they've had world experts on about blood pressure. And not a single one of their talks in their whole spectrum has ever been about any childhood condition, any childhood condition. They're talking about optimizing wellness when we can be doing this in childhood. And what I want to reach out to them for is to have this chat. And we'll talk about cardiovascular disease. And we'll talk about how, we have, what we call, it's called essential hypertension. It means high blood pressure, and you just got it because you just got it. There's no underlying medical reason. Well, I would just say pause for a sec. Let's do a retrospective analysis on what was that child's breathing and sleep like. Because we know prospectively now, and that came from Australian research in about 2015, that these sleep disorder breathing things are translating into high blood pressure in early childhood, adolescence, and then bouncing forwards into adulthood. Like, they're set up for failure right there from a blood pressure point of view, right there. We also know in this sleep disordered breathing spectrum of things that it also mucks up the blood lipids. And we've simplified, blood lipids into good and bad cholesterol, as what we're talking about. Well, the bad cholesterol is elevated in children with sleep disordered breathing. So we have high blood pressure, we have high cholesterol, we have what's called arterial stiffness. This is all heart attack and stroke material right here when you go to read the adult literature. We also, in children, have demonstrated plaque buildup. Okay, so plaque buildup is what we call atherogenesis. It's the thing that leads to heart attacks and strokes of certain type. Again, there's your problem right there. Okay, in kids, demonstrated, proven. And then, just sort of, we just keep layering upon this. One of the other sort of, risk factors for heart attack and stroke is diabetes. Okay, high blood sugar. Well, we touched on the diet part, but the thing that protects us, we need sugar, but in a certain level, sugar is toxic to us. So we have a system that regulates our blood sugar to keep it under control. That regulatory system is not working properly in kids and adults, in kids that have sleep disordered breathing. So their whole body hormone system that regulates sugar control doesn't work properly. So they're prone to their blood sugars creeping up a bit, not to the diabetes point, but it's high normal. Okay. And then it also then affects the gut. And we're starting to learn a lot about the brain-gut axis. It was something that was talked about at university when I was there, but not really understood in terms of this thing called the microbiome. And everyone's like about, oh, gut health, gut health, gut health. Well, hang on. Let me interject here yet again. Sleep disordered breathing. And we've known about this for about 10 to 15 years at least. Because, and the reason I know that, because in my first book that came out in 2016, I was making reference to research that I was reading that was already out there then. So I know that it's at least 10 years. And it was in animal models, what they were doing is they were exposing mice to low oxygen levels. So deliberately making a slight low oxygen environment and then looking at what does it do to their gut microbiome. And it changed. And again, we've simplified this to good bacteria, bad bacteria. The bad bacteria to start to take over. And what we've also learned is that with this brain-gut axis, is that there's an interplay there in communication that then basically, as clever as we want to think we are, the gut and the bacteria are somewhat driving the bus at times because that actually affects our food-seeking behaviors. And in what way? It makes us crave the high-sugar foods. Why? Because that particular type of bacteria wants it. So in a way, we've kind of been taken over, by these little bacteria are actually telling us what to do without us realizing it. But interestingly, if we resist that temptation and do the, the gut health protocol, the good ones start to make a comeback. But the comeback is limited if you have a breathing and sleep problem because basically you're swimming against the tide there in that low oxygen effect. And what do we also know at the brain gut axis? Mental health. We know understanding those links. And back to what you said before with sleep disordered breathing. So let's just give you some very simple, take homes in terms of mental health now. I'm going to list some mental health conditions: depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, psychosis, PTSD, ADHD, ASD, bipolar affective disorder, personality disorder. Everything I mentioned goes up if you've got sleep disordered breathing, every single one of them. Okay. Some of them by a factor of three. Okay. Now let's take that out of the equation for the moment. Let's look at something completely different, but not entirely. Let's look at hay fever. Okay. Let's look at hay fever. So this is nasal allergies. All right. All right. This is another, soapbox that I get on. It's not just allergies. It really isn't. Okay. So now nasal allergies causes nasal congestion, and that can lead to a breathing and a sleep problem, which is everything we've just already spoken about. But just ignore that for the moment. They don't always cause a breathing and a sleep problem. So just having nasal allergies by themselves in a child, that child is 30% more likely to suffer from clinical anxiety. 30% more likely because they've got nasal allergies. Why? Because nasal allergies are really annoying. And what is anxiety? When you're annoyed. 2 and 2 is 4. Okay. And we talked about brain growth and brain development in the context of that prefrontal cortex, and so forth. Well, that's not the only part of the brain that gets mucked up in sleep disordered breathing. The memory part does. That's called the hippocampus. And then the learning part, or sort of the anxiety part, it's called the amygdala. You know what? You know what happens in the kids that have got allergies? You know what happens in kids with sleep disordered breathing? Well, when you use a part of the brain more, it gets bigger. It gets bigger. So their brains, their amygdala is bigger. Why? Because it was conditioned to be so. By what? Not breathing properly, by getting bothered and irritated by allergies. So we're basically promoting a type of brain function that is actually counterproductive to sensible function because of these underlying pathologies. So when we look at this whole big, big picture, everything's connected. Healthcare is segregated, but the person is the big picture. The things that we have touched on here, again, somebody, please, Andrew Huberman, Peter Attia, someone's got to know someone. The world's not that small. We need to get these childhood issues as part of these wellness conversations because of exactly what you said. We're raising adults. We're nurturing a child to be the adult that we want or need them to become. And we know that's an important thing to do. We know that, nurture and nature are, intertwined. It really does make a big difference in terms of opportunities and experiences and outcomes. And, these are the things that we need to work on equality for, because we don't, not everyone has equal ability, but we do want equal opportunity to reach your potential. In terms of, there are literally, neurosurgeons and the like living, unfortunately, in the worst of conditions that will never see the light of day to be the same. But they are there. It's just purely that opportunity. So let's work together on pulling that up. But at the grassroots level, we really need all these health and wellness things that people are focusing on an adult to realize, you know what? Could have done it with your kid. Could have been
Happens
done as
way
a
back
kid.
here.
Hit the rewind button. All those Twinkie bars that you were chowing down on. Well, guess what? Your body remembers that, and it's not too late to change, but you've got to make those changes. And those cigarettes, that ain't good. That alcohol, it ain't good. All right. Not trying to be 1920s, 1930s, prohibition and teetotaler areas, but let's just be honest with the conversation pieces. And then when it comes to breathing and sleep, let's be honest about it. And I got a lot of pushback when I started making this noise, but the science papers have come around. When I started this conversation piece way back over 10 years ago, I was pretty blunt and to the point. I'm kind of a bit like that way. And I was saying it. I was saying these children with sleep disordered breathing are getting brain damage. And it's like, oh, you can't say brain damage.
Period. But that's it. Period. Like, stop there. That's it.
But that's it. That is it. And again, that's why we don't let children drink alcohol. It's why we don't let them play with mercury. It's why we're worried about chemical exposure, heavy metal exposure. That's why, because it causes brain damage. But if I say snoring at night causes brain damage, it's like, yo, you can't say that. It's like, you know what? Now the science papers are even saying it. Like, it's actually in the titles of the paper. They are saying brain damage. And I think it's partly, no, it's got nothing to do with me. That's not like they're following my lead. I think it's the frustration. We have these scientists, they're not clinical people, okay? But they're at the grassroots, they're doing all the science, they're doing the research, they're seeing these kids, you know, in their working capacity, and they're going, why are doctors not listening to us? Damn it, we're gonna call it brain damage. All right. They're gonna
And
start
to
listening.
me, we're right back where we started, where I said, I don't understand why we don't have red flags, sirens going off, and everyone, I mean, just a 10% lower, 10 point lower IQ. It's there, it's factual.
Look at how much money parents put into like accessory education, like school tutors, okay, for a child that's struggling at math, struggling at reading, struggling with whatever.
That's a good point.
Well, let's go back to sleep disordered breathing. We have looked at those things. Your math skills are decreased if you have sleep disordered breathing. Okay. So if you're basically trying to optimize your child, make sure that their breathing and sleep is optimal first, because you need that foundation to build upon. You know, you can have the best architect design and the best builder, but unless the foundation, the thing that you're putting it on, is rock solid, it is not going to hold.
Slide
It
right
might
off.
be good for a bit, but it's going to start falling apart. And that's what these children are doing. They are falling apart because their foundation is not there. They have, you know, like I said, our whole biology, you started biology. It's an amazing thing. It's
Good.
ridiculous. It doesn't make sense. It's
No, it
extraordinary.
doesn't. It's mind-blowing.
It's extraordinary when you get into the weeds. I mean, we take it for granted, but when you get into the weeds, it's just extraordinary. And, but it's also, it doesn't take much to really upset the apple cart. Like, it's really, really fragile. You know, and again, if you don't mind me saying, you know, you made it public knowledge about your cancer. That was one genetic mishap that slipped through the door, that then everything just knocked on from there. One. Now, your body has this amazing protective system against it. What do we know about adults? Adults with sleep disordered breathing, certain type of cancers are more likely to slip through the door. So breast cancer is an example. In my country, we wave the flag again for the highest rate of skin cancer known as melanoma. Melanoma is worse if you've got obstructive sleep apnea in adulthood. You know, bowel cancer, prostate, you know, the list goes on. Why? Because part of our defense system against cancer is our immune system. And when does our immune system, you know, people talk about, oh, I want to boost my immune system, and then they go and buy some green powder and make a green smoothie, thinking that's the biohack to it all. Your immune system is replenished and rejuvenated when you sleep,
At
as
night.
long as you sleep well. So sleep is not just about the brain, it's also about your immune system.
So
So
eat your
you've got.
veggies, not the pretend ones, like eat the real
Yeah.
good veggies
Yeah.
and sleep.
Yeah. And breathe.
And breathe.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that's the sort of the spin around and knock-on effect is, you know, like you said, you know, we start at one point and then we just do this full circle and so forth. And yeah, look, you and I know these red flags are there. The problem is that they're just behind a wall. We just need someone to just peek around that wall and go, guys, I think we found
Everybody
a
come out. Let's
problem.
talk about it.
Yeah, and let's be honest about it, and let's not weaponize words. Let's not weaponize brain damage, okay? And make it say that I find that upsetting. So, well, you should find it upsetting because it is upsetting, and it needs to then be motivating to resolving it, okay? All right, that's the thing that you've got to sort of then pivot towards, is that, you know, we need to raise the awareness. And we need to raise the level at which we are proactive about addressing these things. It's time to stop, you know, kicking the can down the road, because we know how that story ends. You just got to, again, look, circle back, look at your processed food industry in the United States. Look how that story is playing out now. You have a 50% overweight and obesity rate for the first time in your country's history. your life expectancy of your current generation is less
Has gone
than the
down.
one that has come from. Your life expectancy has gone down. You spend more money on healthcare per GDP than any country in the world, and your outcomes are getting worse because the basics are not there.
You can find out more about the Children's Airway First Foundation and our mission to fix before six on our website at childrensairwayfirst.org. The CAF website offers tons of great resources for both parents and medical professionals. Visit our Parents Portal, Clinicians Corner, Resource Center, and Video Library to see for yourself. We also encourage parents to join the Airway Huddle, our Facebook support group, which was created for parents of children with airway and sleep-related issues. You can access the Airway Huddle support group at facebook.com/groups/airwayhuddle. As a reminder, this podcast and the opinions expressed here are not a medical diagnosis. If you suspect your child might have an airway issue, contact your pediatric airway dentist or pediatrician. And now, let's jump back into today's episode.
So again,
Comes back
this
to
is
that
where
three-legged stool.
just let's just call it what it is, and exactly right. For those that don't know the analogy, if you can sit on a three-legged stool, you can't sit on a two-legged one. Okay,
Exactly. So you need
it's
nutrition, you
you
need
need
sleep,
nutrition.
and you need
Yeah.
air. You take
You
one
really do.
away.
Yep, and then you things start to fall apart. So I think as you know, I can sort of talk and rabbit on for hours on this. It's one of the things about just knowing it so well. And then I think importantly, knowing that the interplay and the links, being able to bring gut health, mental health, and all these sorts of things into the mix. Look, I should be mindful, it's your show, not mine. Did you have
No,
any
but
other
well,
questions?
before we
Did you
go,
have any other questions?
before we go, I want to talk a little bit about your book,
Sure.
for parents that don't know about it and want to check it out.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm up to book number six, which is just a reflection of my passion for this. And I think for parents, there's two that I would flag. One is a general book, and it is called Sleep Disordered Breathing, A Parent's Guide. And what I do in that book is I try and give them a roadmap, because one thing I've realized is that when parents stumble across this problem, depending on who their first touch point is, really dictates what then can be the treatment paradigm that can play out. And if they see an ENT, they might just get the ENT version. If they see a dental practitioner, they might just get the dental version. If they see a breathing practitioner, they might just see a breathing rehabilitation scenario. But the problem is that, again, that's a segregated system in something where it is actually a multidisciplinary team approach to a multifactorial problem. So what I did in that book is I sort of did my best to spell out all of the things, all the ear, nose, and throat problems, all the dental problems, et cetera, and say, you know what? If you've got this problem, well, you need this for it. And if you've got this problem, you need this for it. And if your child has got both, hey, they need both. And in terms of having a sequence and so forth, these are the things to do. And whilst we're at it, you need to look to see if there's nasal allergies. You need to check their metabolic profile, in particular their iron. because this thing, like I said, it mucks up the gut in certain ways. One of the ways it mucks it up is it limits iron absorption. If your iron is low, you're tired. This kid is tired
Right.
already. So this compounds the problem. And iron is a really important thing, not just from an energy point of view. It's really important for a whole lot of brain function and development too. So there's all these knock-on effects. So that's the sort of, that's to me, that's kind of like your roadmap. And then the other one that I've put out recently is going really, really deep into the weeds of the links between ear, nose, and throat, and the ADHD and ASD. And it's called the ABC of ENT, ADHD, and ASD. So it's basically it's the alphabet book.
Got it.
And the reason I've done that is that I see a lot of children, okay, and in particular, I seem to have a knack. An attraction that then follows on from word of mouth to seeing the children that have the neurodivergent neurodevelopmental issues and have a good understanding about how, like I said, you know, before, these little things are not little things in these kids
Right.
and how we can miss so many things by being complacent and how, you know, it's pushing these kids further off course than they need to be in the spectrum of their potential and outcomes of the same. So from that point of view, what I've done there is just given a huge overview of genetics, developmental brain development pathways of, you know, nutrition, feeding, ear infections, breathing, sleep, tonsillitis, nasal allergies, etc. And how these things are all related to brain development, which is not what people think about intrinsically. You know, don't think about how tonsillitis affects the brain, but it does. You don't think about how an ear infection affects the brain, but it does. And I just sort of throw a big spotlight on this. So that again, at the end of the day, the parents can have the knowledge and be proactive. And as I say in the tail end of that book is, you know, don't take no for an answer. You know your child best, you know. And you know, it certainly if someone says it's not that bad, well, look, they could be right, but for goodness sake, go and ask someone else just in case they're not, because it
Right.
could make a huge difference to your child as to what their landing point can be, as you know, as you said, as the time plays out to become an adult.
I love that. And I'll leave that as our final word, because usually I ask for a last word. To me, that's perfect.
Okay.
I love
Good
that.
deal.
So thank you again so much for coming on. I always enjoy it when you're here, and I appreciate you attacking some of these questions our parents had.
Oh, look, it's always a pleasure, you know, and it, like I said, it really is a privilege as well. You know, and there's so much more that you and I know that we could talk about. But given that it's been 2 hours, I'm pretty sure that that just became two episodes for you again.
Yes.
So I don't envy you for trying to work out where the split in the middle is, but I'm sure you're clever enough to do that. And anyone that's listening to this that has their own podcasts that want to sort of, you know, jump on board, they can find me through the social medias. So I've got the Facebook, Dr. David McIntosh, and the Insta, Dr. David McIntosh ENT, and they can probably reach out to you if they're having trouble finding me. You can sort of bounce them in my
Yep,
direction
and we'll put
too.
all this in our show notes as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I'm more than happy to do these things. I've got another one tomorrow, and I've got another one next weekend, and I did four, you know, in the past fortnight. Like I will put the time aside and make the effort to. Just know that at the end of the day, there's a very good chance I've just helped one child from doing this. That's all it takes to be worth it.
And that's kind of our motto every day. Like, what if we save one child? 400 million to go, but we've got one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Thank you.
Real pleasure as always.
You can stay connected with the Children's Airway First Foundation by following us on Instagram, Facebook, X, LinkedIn, and YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe to the Airway First podcast on your favorite podcasting platform so you won't miss an upcoming episode. If you'd like to be a guest or have an idea for an upcoming show, shoot us a note via the contacts page on our website, or send us an email directly at info@childrensairwayfirst.org. Today's episode was written and directed by Rebecca St. James, video editing and promotion by Ryan Drawn, and guest outreach by Christy Bochinkian. And finally, thanks to all the parents and medical professionals out there that are working hard to help make the lives of kids around the globe just a little bit better. Take care, stay safe, and happy breathing, everyone.